Good evening, everybody. My name is Patty Neuberger, and together with my husband, Brad Wexler, it is my privilege to welcome you tonight on behalf of the Cornell Parents Fund Committee. Brad and I have been members of the committee since 2008, and it has really been a wonderful experience for us. Now, we have three Cornelians, one who graduated, Samantha, from School of Arts and Sciences in 2008, Robert, who's an ILR, and he's graduating in 2015, and David, who is just entering Human Ecology, School of Human Ecology, and will graduate, hopefully, with your children. We sat exactly where you're sitting 5 years ago, and I can remember feeling so nervous because neither my husband nor I had gone to Cornell. Not only had we not gone to Cornell, we had never been to the Cornell campus before our daughter Samantha came to look at school. So we went and we moved her in and we sat here about to listen to Susan Murphy talk about Cornell, and we thought, this is such an overwhelming place. How will we ever navigate it? But more importantly, how will she ever navigate it? And I am here to tell you that it is such a welcoming university, not only to your children, but to all of you. And if you decide that you want to be part of it, Cornell really allows parents to be part of it. And in Human Ecology, the Dean of Admissions just said to us, we accepted your child, but we also accepted you as a family. And it's a very warm feeling to know that when you leave your children after high school, you think you're never going to be involved. But I promise you, if you get a call from anyone at Cornell to come to an event or to do anything, please do it, because you can become very much a part of this university, which is really wonderful. We are fortunate enough tonight to have Susan Murphy, who is the Vice President for Student and Academic Services, and she's going to talk to you tonight about campus life for your children and what you should expect, and it's actually really helpful. It's one of those things that you sit and you think, am I really going to sit here for a little while to listen? And Susan's terrific. Susan has served Cornell University as Vice President for Student and Academic Services since July 1994. She is a 1973 graduate of Cornell's College of Arts and Sciences. Susan has majored in history. She subsequently completed her master's degree at Stanford University and Montclair State College. In 1994, she earned her PhD in educational administration at Cornell. She joined the Cornell staff in 1978, following work as head of the guidance department at Chatham Borough High School in Chatham, New Jersey. And for 16 years, she worked in admissions and financial aid at Cornell, including 9 years as Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid. In addition to her current responsibilities at Cornell, Susan is a member of the Policy Committee of the Council of Ivy League Presidents, and she has also served on many statewide and national higher education boards. But most importantly, as all of you, Susan is a parent of two Cornelians, Sarah, who's the class of 1986, and Julia, the class of 1991. So please help me in welcoming Susan Murphy.
Patty, thank you so very much for your kind comments, and most of all, for you and Brad sharing your three children with us. It's wonderful for us whenever we have one member of your family join, but to have three, and to have three in three different colleges, tells us that by the time David graduates, you will be a master of this university. Having heard me twice before, you're excused this evening if you'd like to be. Because I know you also have other commitments in Ithaca. But I also want to say, as you escape, thank you to the Parents Fund. Because this I want you to pass on to your colleagues. The Parents Fund has had a fabulous partnership with us in Student and Academic Services. And that partnership has been in coordinating events like this, helping coordinate events in the region, and for those who wish to be financially supportive of the university, in addition to the way you're being financially supportive through your tuition dollars, we have partnered, and they have made possible, frankly, things we could not have done without the help of the Parents Committee in some of our strategic initiatives in diversity and civic engagement and our living learning environment, when we've needed crisis funding, and mostly when our students come up with great ideas that we never thought about putting in the budget, and they come into my office and knock on the door and say, can't we please compete in the National Club Lacrosse Championship, but we need buses to get there? Or can't we please bring in a speaker? Or can't we do something that we had never thought about? The Parents Fund has made that possible. So please extend my hearty appreciation to them and thank you. And I want to thank all of you for, first of all, for sharing your sons and daughters or grandsons and granddaughters, whatever the family relationship may be, with us. It's an honor for us and a privilege and a responsibility we feel, just as you have for these last 18 years. And I also want to thank you that after what I know has been a long day and one perhaps a bit challenging physically and emotionally, that you decided to stick around for a little bit to hear about Parenting 101. I want to assure you that this next hour is your hour. So I want you to take a deep breath. Just take the deep breath in. Remember to exhale, and relax. Your sons and daughters will not be texting you in the next hour. At least they had better not be texting you in the next hour or calling you, because they are with their resident advisor and having really the first community introduction to the university. This is the two-hour session when our student resident advisors gather the students from the floor or the suite, and they begin to get to know one another as a community and begin to get to know some of what they want to create as a community where they are living. So I don't expect to hear any tingles or feel any vibrations, and if we do and they're lost, they can't find their group, this will be the first good experience for them to figure it out themselves. I know it's a big day. I'm just curious, how many of you are sending your very first child to college?
Wow.
Oh, congratulations. Okay, put your hands down. How about this is your second child? Keep your hands up. How about a third or a fourth or whatever? Okay, first-year parents, second and third-year parents, keep your hands up. First-year parents, look at all these people who are here. You will survive. You might even do it again. Taking your child to college is one of those life transitions, just like sending your kid to kindergarten, or having them get on a plane for the very first time when you aren't with them, or having them do something big and significant. I'm seeing this process myself this year. As Patty said, I have two fabulous stepdaughters, Sarah, the class of 86, and Julia, who should have been the class of 88, but she took a rather circuitous route that you can read about in the book Voices, and so she was the class of 91. Julia's elder daughter is a freshman at her father's alma mater, University of Alabama Honors College, so I'm watching my older daughter be the parent of a freshman, and my younger daughter, who's always taken a slightly different path, has her son in kindergarten this year. And I'm suggesting that they spend a lot of time each other on the phone to support one another. I know that sense of physical exhaustion because you've done a lot today, although I hope we helped you with that process. I'm sure there are a few tears that have happened, and if you've been keeping them in all day because you're determined not to cry in front of your child, you can sniffle a little bit in here. It's perfectly okay. I hope you're proud. You deserve to be very proud because I'm going to tell you a little bit about this class that they are joining. And you're probably a little nervous. Nervous for yourself about what life is going to be like at home without your child. Nervous for them about whether they're going to succeed. Let me suggest that not only are you feeling all of this, but although they will probably never admit it, so are their brothers and sisters. They've probably already scoped out the room that's available, or at least the half of the bathroom that's available. But there's a little bit of, I wonder what life is going to be like, particularly if the one that is left at home is now the only one left at home. And I will also tell you, as a devout dog lover, as most people who know me know, if you have a dog, and I'm not so smart about cats, but if you have a dog at home, and the dog has been particularly attached to this Cornelian, please take home a t-shirt that smells like this student, because your dog is going to wonder what's happened. Where'd they go? Where's my partner? So you want something that smells familiar, and your Cornelian will be happy that somebody's missing them besides you. So who is this class of, the class of 2017? President Skorton will talk a little bit more about it tomorrow, but just quickly, your students are among almost 40,000 applicants who applied, the most selective year in our history. They are joining a class that's about 3,280, should have been about 3,180, so everyone's in a bed. Some rooms are a little bit bigger than we thought they would be, but everyone's taken care of. Every state in the country is represented except for Wyoming and Arkansas. So if you have family relatives in Wyoming and Arkansas, please tell us. We'd love to round out the 50. And there are 51 countries just in this freshman class. There are actually 120 countries represented among the Cornell student body. So even though we love to call ourselves centrally isolated, or people describe us that way, this is a world community here in Ithaca. And it's truly one of the treasures about living here. It's one of the reasons I've made my home here now, as you've heard, 35 years, because it is a world community, and I find that extraordinary. About 12% of our class from those 51 countries are international. More than 20% are either African American, Hispanic American, or Native American, or some combination thereof. Almost 17% are Asian American. So we no longer have a majority population in this melting pot of our students. And we think that's pretty terrific because that's the world in which they're going to be entering as scholars and as professionals. Women represent 51% of the class, a far cry from when I was here all those many years ago, when the ratio used to be 3.5 men to 1 female. And we used to say, one dated an IC woman, one dated a Wells woman, one had a hometown honey, and we were left with a half a guy. But that's not true anymore. It's even Steven, so they get to know whomever. So it's a very talented class. Now, that's something about which to take great pride. It's also something to think about, and we will tease the students, and sometimes they don't quite understand my sense of humor. But I want you to go with me on this. Most of your students, many of your students come from high schools that do not rank. I think about a third of you. Those of you who have high schools that rank, all your kids are in the top 10%, or maybe the top 12%. Now think about it. When they graduate, only 10% are going to be in the top 10% of the Cornell graduating class. Right? You can only have a top 10%. So it's a daunting realization if you've always been at the very top of your class that maybe you're not going to graduate in that same place because 90% of them are not going to be in the top 10% of their class. Now, we kind of cheat a little bit because we have 7 colleges, so we end up with 7 top 10%. But you put them all together, you put them all together, and they're still only 10%. So I want you to think about that. Because when they get their first grade, I will almost guarantee it will not be an A. Could be an A minus, could be a B plus. Mine was a C minus on a history paper that I was writing, and I was furious. I thought it was a pretty good paper. Obviously, my teacher didn't think so, and when I went to see him, by the time I left, I understood why he thought that. So it's a recalibration, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. As Patty mentioned, we think this is a pretty special community. Obviously, I have a bias, as you can hear. Both of my children went here. I went here for 2 degrees. My husband had his PhD from here, so I will admit to bleeding Cornell red. But I do think that you will find that there's many aspects of what this institution is about. Some would call us the first truly American university. We do serve as New York State's land grant university, which means we have a commitment to share what we do on this campus with the people of the state of New York expressly, but increasingly also the people of this country and the world. We take their issues to inform our scholarship, and we take our scholarship to try to partner with them to address their issues. So we may have the most theoretical work going on, and we certainly do in the basic sciences and humanities and others, areas, but we have also an extraordinary amount of applied work, and that is a very unusual combination. And in fact, we're the only school that is a member of the Ivy League and also a land-grant university. We sometimes laugh and say we have one foot in the Ivy League and one foot in the Big Ten, and we mean that in the best way. We also know that your sons and daughters are bringing with them an enormous set of academic talents, which I've just described, but also wonderful interests and experiences. And I have come to admire what my colleagues at Beloit do every year. Some of you may have seen this publication. It's called the Beloit Mindset. And what two of my colleagues at Beloit do is they write about what are some of the experiences the class of 2017 have had to remind us old guys and gals how the world has changed since we went to college or whatever. And I want to just share, it's a list of some 50, 60 items. I'm not going to read all 60, but let me just share a few that caught my eye. So this class is described as a sharing generation, having shown tendencies to share everything, including possessions, no matter how personal. Sometimes makes a challenge in the living environment when they aren't wondering where their things went. They are a group where having a chat has seldom involved talking. Gaga has never been baby talk. Their TV screens are getting smaller as their parents' screens grow larger. The rites of passage for these students have more to do with having their own cell phone and Skype accounts than getting a driver's license and a car. They've never attended a concert in a smoke-filled arena. Lucky them. They've never even had to go to their friend's house to study together. They just get online and on the phone, and they do it all electronically. And their parents' car's CD player is just so embarrassing and ancient. And the list goes on and on. And I will admit I've been around long enough that I don't even understand some of these. I'm so far out of it. So it's a good reminder for us what their experiences are and why, I will tell you, working in an institution of higher education is absolutely the best job in the world. You can't possibly get stale. You won't survive if you do, because there's this new energy that comes every single year. And if we didn't get what we wanted to do quite right last year, we can take a deep breath over the summer and try it again this year. And so it's just a wonderful renewing opportunity. You will probably see in newspapers galore many, many articles and advice for parents. And it's a little dicey to try to talk about those issues without putting strictly my own bias. But I do want to share some things I've learned over the 19 years now I've been the Chief Student Affairs Officer, and also watching how my husband dealt with his two daughters, my two stepdaughters, particularly when Julia called and said that she was stopping out after the fall semester. Well, she came in the spring semester of her freshman year. And not only did she stop out, but she decided to follow the Grateful Dead for 2.5 years. And watching her dad navigate that, he kept me far away from the phone because he knew I was incapable of not asking a million questions. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? Where are you? Are you out of your mind? And he just kept the phone lines open. And sure enough, one day she called and said, "Dad, I'm ready to go back to school." She went back to a local community college, got her grades back where she was comfortable that she could manage academics, came back that summer to Cornell. We were convinced solely to prove to her sister that she could do the same level of work that her sister did, because her sister had already graduated. And then to our shock but absolute delight, she decided to return to Cornell. And then to our complete shock, she decided to live at home the first year she returned. Because she, at that point in her life, so she's now 25, perhaps 24, 25, she knows she's got to be serious about her academics. She's switching majors, and she doesn't want to be distracted. So she was in a very different place then to be a student than she was when she was 18. She just frankly wasn't ready to be in college. And I give her enormous credit for being smart enough to recognize that, and her dad patient enough to wait. I'm not sure I could have done it had I been the only family member involved. So there are lots of ways one will earn a Cornell degree. And when you now ask Sarah and Julia where they went to college, they'll say Cornell. You hear their years. You have no idea that Julia didn't start when she would have earned a class of 91 degree. The other thing you will discover, and I'm sure Patty's seeing this with her three children, their Cornell experiences were entirely different. You would have no idea these two girls went to the same university in terms of what they chose to do, where they lived, who their friends were, what they studied. And to me, that's one of Cornell's absolute treasures. I share that with you because the key role of that story is the role my husband played with his girls and the role you still have to play as the parent of Cornellians. Your role is going to change rather dramatically. And if you read the blog that Professor Glenn Altshuler and David Skorton have just written for Forbes, they'll talk about the change from being the decider-in-chief, which may have been the role you've played at home, to what I would call the guide-in-chief. And that's where I would have failed with Julia, because I would have had a million things to tell her what to do, as opposed to listening and guiding. And so I want to talk a little bit about some of the ways we think about that when we accept your sons and daughters as students. Legally, most of them are adults, except when it comes to the consumption of alcohol. But most of them are 18, and that will define their world in some ways that I will describe. We know developmentally that some of them are absolutely there, most of them are not. We call them emerging adults. They're getting close, and by the time they graduate 4 years from now, we hope that together we have done our work, and so as they go off to the world of scholarship or work, whatever they choose to do, they indeed will get there. But to get there, they're going to need to learn to advocate for themselves. They're going to need to learn how to solve problems for themselves. They're going to have to develop perspective, which will come for some quite easily, others in a bumpy way. They're going to have to learn how to take care of themselves and be responsible for themselves. And in learning all of that, that means we can't do it for them, and neither can you. But it also means we don't abandon them and just, you know, make them jump in and sink or swim. So it's finding that middle road between being there to guide them, support them, catch them when necessary, but begin to let them make their choices, and some of them will be choices you would not make for them, but let them make those choices and then help them figure out what they've learned as a result of it. So let me talk about some of the challenges I know they're going to face. If you have a second or third child, you've been through some of this. I'm not going to dwell on them, but just to try to tick them off and give a few thoughts for you to consider. And then I want to make sure you know the resources, and then we'll have time to do some questions and answers. So one of the first challenges we often see is the roommate. My guess is for many of our students, they have not shared a bathroom with anybody else, let alone a bedroom. And we now put them in 220 square feet, some of them with complete strangers, and we say, have a great year together. We hope they were honest when they, and I hope it was they, filled out their lifestyle questionnaire. Because we do try to recognize that people live differently. Some have to have music blaring, some need it to be quiet, some are morning people, some are nighttime people. I pleaded with my granddaughter, who has the neatest locker, the neatest schoolwork you've ever seen, presents herself pristinely, and all of her energy about being neat goes into those three things, and nothing is left for home. And I said, please be honest when you fill out your lifestyle questionnaire that your bathroom looks like a bomb went off in it. Because if you have to share that with somebody and they sort their socks by color, you're going to have a roommate problem. So some of this is just the natural coming together. We will not start even entertaining requests to switch roommates if it's gotten to that point until the beginning of September. We will say, let's work on it. We're going to start with them. They'll have to go through to having a contract. They all go through putting together a contract so they can live together in this shared space. We will involve the RA if there's a challenge. We'll get even the professional staff, residence hall director. It does turn out that some roommates just are absolutely incompatible and need to move on. Because we're over-enrolled, we don't have a lot of flexibility. More often than not, roommates become very compatible throughout the year, and some even will develop their closest Cornell friendship from their freshman year roommate. What we say to students is don't go in with the expectation that your best friend's going to be your roommate. What you want to accomplish that is at least you have a compatible working and living arrangement. And that's what we're going to work towards. But we know that sharing space can be a challenge, even if they chose to live together. Because they chose to live together because they knew each other as campmates, classmates, they found each other online, they think they're compatible, and now you put them together, and guess what? Maybe it's quite different. So don't be surprised if you hear stuff about the roommates. That's why we have upperclassmen who are trained as resident advisors. It's also why we have professional staff in all of our residence halls. They are the residence hall director, and that is one person's name and phone number you need to have before you leave. So roommates, number one. Second will be the first exam. I've already referenced it a minute ago, but trust me, it is unlikely they will see grades that they are typical, they're used to seeing in high school. And that doesn't mean they're going to flunk out of Cornell. It doesn't mean they've gotten stupid all of a sudden. It doesn't mean they're a failure. It doesn't mean that their career path to be a doctor or a lawyer is gone on that first paper. But it does mean they need to figure out, did I not study well? Did I not understand how I was going to be tested? Are the skills that I learned in high school to study, and some of your sons and daughters have frankly not been challenged enough in high school, so they don't have superb study skills. Others come with terrific study skills, but they're very different than what they need here. Again, we have lots of resources, and the best thing for them to do if they're surprised by a grade is to go talk with a faculty member and see what transpired. You're more than likely going to hear about changes of fields of study. That's a normal process. You may have a career path in mind for them. That may be what they end up choosing to do. But I'll share with you Cornell's bias. Our bias is they should ultimately choose their own path. Now, we know that makes for some difficult choices at home if the families had in mind this one's going to be the whatever. But I ask you to listen to what they're saying. They may find out a passion that they had never even known existed because of the enormous array of academic opportunities they have here. Some of them will also change majors each semester for the next two or three or four. By the time they're juniors, they got to pick one. But particularly if they're in arts and sciences, a flavor a semester is not a bad idea. Just by junior year, they got to have one. Academic integrity is something we're going to talk with them a lot. We've learned as our population gets ever more cosmopolitan that the expectations we have in American higher ed is not always the same of other cultures. So part of it is our responsibility to teach what are our expectations in this country and at this university. But we take academic integrity very seriously. And one of the things we will say to students is you need to ask your faculty members if they don't make it clear, when is it okay to share, when is it okay to collaborate, and when is it not okay? And it can change by faculty member, it can change by discipline. But there's a lot of bad habits out there that we're going to try to work very hard to correct, and it's something that we do take very seriously. Finding friends is something that surprisingly can be difficult for some students, particularly if they've gone to the same school system or even the same school from kindergarten to senior year. They probably don't remember how they made friends. They've always had these friends. Now, if they don't have friends coming with them to Cornell, here I've got 3,280 classmates. How am I going to find people that have interests like I do, but also have different interests that are different than mine, but I still want to be able to get to know that person? I think it's become increasingly challenging with the cell phone, because it's so easy to stay connected to high school friends. Now, I happen to still have a lifelong connection to my high school friends. I adore them. But when we all went to separate schools, I saw them when I went home at Thanksgiving. I saw them when I went home at Christmas. Maybe I called one of them a semester, but that was expensive. these guys are going to be on the phone all the time. And that's great for maintaining close connections, but they need to find the friend group here. And so if you're hearing from your son or daughter, I can't find anyone I want to spend time with, you know, give them some guidance and advice about how they can do that. The first time your son or daughter is sick, and they're here and you're wherever you are, will be a challenge. Trust me, I've been there. What you want to do is hop in the car immediately and go fix it. Sometimes we want you to do that too, but not as the first thing. The first thing we want you to do is make sure they've called Gannett. I'm going to give you that phone number in a minute. Our health services runs a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week answering service, and they will be in touch with your child immediately in return to determine how serious is the 99-degree fever. I hope that you've had some conversation. There was a wonderful column in the New York Times this week, for those of you from the New York area, called College Prep, This Time for Health, written by a pediatrician whose child was on the way to college. And here was some advice that she gave that I want to pass along to you. They need to know their own medical stories. They need to know themselves what drugs they are allergic to, what are their chronic medical conditions, and they need to own those, and we want to pair them with our physicians to help them. They need to carry their own health insurance card. That should be right there with them with their ID card. They hopefully are up to date with their vaccines. And then they need to know how to deal with some of those, you know, life challenges like relationships, sexual behavior, alcohol, drugs. If you have a family with alcohol dependency, I hope you've had a conversation with your child about that, because very often that's inherited. And now they may have to confront that. If they have been struggling with a mental health issue, we treat that like physical health. It's just one of those organs that needs some help. We have many, many, many supports. But we want them to begin to take responsibility and know the resources that we have. And I hope this is a conversation where you know their medical history better than anyone, other than perhaps their own physician. This is not the time to hide. It's amazing to me how many of our student health history forms are not filled out completely. And I don't mean by that blanks. I mean by that not necessarily the full story. And some of that is because everyone hopes they can start again, and I get that. But this is not the time to hide what we know to be chronic issues. We have a fabulously talented medical staff of all-level physicians, psychiatrists, therapists, counselors, internists, adolescent physician specialists, in addition to the medical community here. And our job will be to put those resources together with your son and daughter. So please, if you've got concerns and questions, don't be shy. I'll be happy to talk about it. We'll put you in touch with the folks at Gannett. But have a conversation with your child about their health and how to maintain their well-being. When we're working with students through any of these issues and wonderful opportunities, you know, we will try to approach it in much the same way we will ask you to do it. You know, we want to help, we want to guide, we want to advise. Sometimes we will have to tell them what to do. We don't like to do that often. We hope that they'll come to the decision themselves, but occasionally we'll have to tell them, you need to take a semester off because your grades really are in trouble. You need to take a semester off because we think you have an alcohol dependency issue. We need you to follow the rules. This was not okay academic integrity-wise. But more often than not, they know what's right and wrong, and we just need to be there as a mirror for them, to listen to them, to support them when they're trying to make the tough choices. And we were all 18, 19, 20, 21 once. When they know what the right thing is to do, but they're with a group of peers that are making different choices, there's nothing more difficult than to make what you know to be the right decision and go against the peer group. And boy, that's when we need to do our work the best and where you need to be as supportive as possible. And that's something especially to listen for. So you obviously are the most important resource. I guarantee you, you will hear some things before we will. This generation is much more connected with parents than we were. Part of that technology makes it possible. We did a survey of our undergraduate students, as we do every other year, and learned that particularly for our female students, they're likely to be on the phone every day, particularly with their moms. It's not clear to me who's calling who. Staying in touch is vitally important. I personally am not a big fan of the daily staying in touch, because then when you don't hear daily, you'll panic, and it's only because they're busy. The sweetest thing I heard my daughter say to me when my granddaughter went off for her week of service before college was she had not had a phone call from her daughter in 4 days, and it was driving her crazy. And I thought, yes, Caitlin is doing just fine. So, but do talk with your son and daughter about sort of what your expectations are, what you want. I also will know that if something goes awry, you will hear that. They may not always close the circle and tell you that things are really okay. One of my classic memories of when my cousin was here as a freshman and he took his first exam, and it was one of those grades he'd never seen in his life. His dad is my first cousin, and of course he immediately calls home. Then, turns out, the grades in this particular class were put on a curve, and he ended up with a B- on his first physics exam. Not so bad as a college freshman. He forgot to call home and tell his parents he had not flunked the exam. He had actually gotten a B-. And so I get the call from his dad saying, you know, is he okay? Is he okay? We haven't heard anything. Is he there? Well, he was off at track practice. He was doing just fine. So when you get a panic call, you know, check back in at some point to make sure things are still okay. But you will be a vital resource. I'm going to give you a set of numbers that I want you to have, and I hope we're getting them all with your student as well. So the most important number is the Cornell Police. 255-1111, or 911 if you're here. We have a wonderful police, highly trained. It's 607-255-1111. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If you have a crisis at home, heaven forbid something awful happens to a family member, I might suggest you call the police to say you have a crisis message to deliver your child, as opposed to calling the kid on the cell phone, because you don't know where they are. You don't know if they have a support system around them. You call the Cornell Police, say there's a crisis at home. They will call our crisis counselor. We will work to make sure someone is by your kid's side if you have to deliver a really bad piece of news. Hopefully it never happens, but trust me, it does upon occasion. So Cornell Police is a 24/7 number. The Gannett Health Services, as I mentioned earlier, is a 24/7 number. That's 607-255-5155. You too may call them when your child calls you and says, it's 104 fever I have, Mom, what do I do? Call Gannett, they'll probably call to get them transported someplace. So those are your two emergency numbers available all the time. Another very helpful and important numbers are Dean of Students. That's 607-255-DEAN, D-E-A-N. Kent Hubble is our Dean of Students. He oversees a staff who do residential programs, student support, fraternity and sorority, student activities. It is not monitored 24 hours a day, but his main role is as student advocate. He was the effort and the brains behind this book, Voices. If you did not pick up your copy at Barton Hall, you could get in touch with his office. And we have one of these for everyone in every family, one per family. It's a wonderful compilation of essays, reflections about what it's like to be at Cornell. This will get on the web later this fall, but you're the lucky first class, and there's a hard copy waiting for you. I mentioned earlier, I hope before you leave, you will know who the residence hall director is responsible for your child's residence hall. These are our professional staff in residential programs. Almost all of them have a master's degree. They supervise the student RAs. They partner with the faculty in residence, and almost every residence hall has a faculty in residence, and they are a wonderful resource to you. I'm not going to give you that big long list because there are many residence halls, but before you leave, figure out who that is. Tomorrow, after the president's convocation, there will be college convocations, and you will be hearing from the advising staff in each college. That's another phone number you should take down. Every Cornell student will have his or her own faculty advisor, and that's a superb and critical resource. But they are also faculty members who teach and research and are not always at the other end of a phone. The advising office can be a great resource, particularly if you've got questions about graduation requirements, AP credit, other concerns that you may have. So those five, police, Gannett, dean of students, residence hall director, college advising office, I think are the five critical numbers every student needs and every family needs. Now, there are many, many, many other resources. We have 28 different religious communities here. So if religion is an important part of your child's experience, I hope they'll get connected through Cornell United Religious Work. As I mentioned, we have lots of staff in the Dean of Students Office whose job it is to support and work with students. We have career staff, and our philosophy with career services is that we start with freshman year, not about placement. We start with helping the student figure out what are their strengths, what are their interests, how will those change, what kind of work opportunities can they get here, what kind of work opportunities can they get in the summer. We have a wonderful alumni network that help create externships and internships for our students. So we truly see career services as a four-year experience for our students. We have a university center, and each college have resources as well. So many, many, many areas. There's also a wonderful parents' website at Cornell that will have links to critical resources for you. We sent you a family guide. I hope you have it. Your students also received a student handbook. Our research tells us you read it more than they do. That's perfectly okay. They wouldn't read it at all if we called it a parent handbook, so we do give it to them. But once they're here, this is not a resource they will use very much. So don't be shy about using it. And then there are lots of other resources out there. I happen to be a reader, so you know there are books about letting go. There's also a wonderful article that says don't let go too soon. Making the most of college. Students, this is based upon some wonderful research from students, and I'll talk a little bit about some of the findings of this. Don't tell me what to do, just send money. A very well-written, humorous text. I'll miss you too, the off-to-college guide for parents and students. Getting the best out of college. This is just what I have on my shelf. If you're like me and you still like to go into Barnes & Noble or whatever bookstore you have, there's lots of stuff. It's just interesting to read and kind of put this in perspective. Let me just share with you a couple things that we will tell students, and I will be telling them over the course of the next couple of days. I hope that they will be very conscious about getting to know faculty. Now, this may sound silly because they all know their high school teachers particularly well, but it's different if they're in a course like this to get to know me if I'm the instructor. Well, how do they do that? Well, they would come to my office hours, because I will post those. They would come before class or after class to come talk to me. We're going to challenge them to get to know at least one faculty member well enough each semester, well enough that they could write a letter of recommendation. Now, if they take half that advice, they'll end up with four people who know them well enough to write letters for med school, law school, a job, an externship, never mind the advisors they've had through clubs and organizations. So talk to them periodically about their faculty members. You know, they've got an advisor, they've got faculty living in their residence, et cetera. We're going to suggest that they get involved with something beyond their academics. Not 10-somethings, but something. We know that students who don't do well here academically is not because they're not capable, but they don't manage their time very well. And getting involved in employment or an activity, particularly one that is fun for them, helps them schedule their time, and then they will be better students. So it may be trying something new, it may be doing something that's familiar. They will have to do physical education, one of the Cornell's odd requirements, but a fabulous thing, I think, because it just is good for them. But there are club sports, as you heard this afternoon, a cappella groups, musical groups, political groups, religious groups, there are 1,000 student organizations. So there's something for them to do. And don't be afraid if they say, Mom and Dad, I want to get involved with it. Don't be afraid if they say one or two. I don't like to see the list of 10, particularly first year, but one or two is helpful. And that also means employment. Research again and again tells us that students who work on campus a reasonable number of hours do better academically and are more satisfied because they're building a connection to the university different than just being a student. We hope that they will learn to ask for help. I've talked a lot about help. Again, that may seem obvious, but there are a lot of type A's in this class, and they may not have had to ask for help before. And they think that's a sign of weakness. You and I might know that learning to ask for help is a sign of strength and a sign of confidence and a sign of knowing yourself well enough that I'm doing well over here, but I need some help over here. And so they're going to hear from us a lot. If you learn anything at Cornell, learn to ask for help. We're going to ask that they stretch their comfort zones. They're going to be exposed to a couple of programs during orientation that will put them outside of their comfort zone, perhaps. Some of them have done that already. I was at the dinner for the students who were on Outdoor Odyssey. And I was talking to some students who'd never hiked, never camped, never been out of the city, and they'd just come back from 6 days of a backpacking trip. And I thought, you can just check stretching your comfort zone right there. You know, what a wonderful way. And when I asked a student, whatever possessed you to think you could do this and you wanted to do it, I wanted to do something new and different. I figured it would be a small enough group and I would have a group of friends by the time everybody else showed up. And that's exactly what accomplished. So stretching their comfort zone. We hope they make wise choices. They'll make some mistakes, but we hope they make wise choices. We will tell them, do not swim in the gorges. This is one of the things I tell. Do not swim in the gorges. It is illegal. That's not always a deterrent for them. It is life-threatening. And so I ask you, hiking in the gorges is fabulous. Enjoying the overlooks of the gorges. We couldn't be more grateful for what nature has given us. But it is life-threatening to swim in the gorges. So that's something I want to be unequivocal about. I hope that as they go through Cornell, they will learn to develop some wonderful resilience. They will become immensely resourceful. And they will have terrific resolve for whatever it is that they want to accomplish in their lives. So with that, let me, you know, conclude my commentary this evening by again just saying to all of you how thrilled we are that you are joining us at Cornell. This will be a fabulous journey. Students will tell us that fall semester freshman year seems like it takes forever, and then all of a sudden they're seniors. Part of that is because there's so much that's new, doing laundry, meeting people, getting to class, figuring out what you have to read when you don't have daily assignments. It's just, it can be overwhelming to them. But don't be shocked if they are able to come home at fall break or spring break, they tell you when, Thanksgiving, they tell you when they're leaving that they're going back home to Cornell. Now, parents don't always like to hear that, but you should take that as a great sign that they have found their place. And many of us have had that experience ourselves. I consider myself just privileged beyond all measure that my career has been in this institution with students as challenging and as interesting as your sons and daughters. There's simply no better job in the world, and getting to know you along the way is the icing. So thank you so much. I'll be happy to answer any questions any of you have. Welcome.
Driven a lot today, so if we can, if you want to leave too, but that's like to know about the Parents Weekend. We live 1,600 miles away, and so it's not easy to come. And then I'd like to know, like, what times the kids, maybe like Thanksgiving and stuff. I don't even know. Do we need to make arrangements? Can he stay?
So first year Parents Weekend is a wonderful opportunity for parents to come back and see Cornell now through their child eyes, and they'll tell you this is their university. We probably get a third of the freshmen will have exams done. So, you know, if it's possible they can feel that having the vast majority will not have an exam this year. It's a weekend where people are on seminars by our colleges, although we talk a bit more, Bill and what you'll hear tomorrow about the academic program, we'll talk about housing options, we'll talk about career services. So it's taking everything you're going to get at this level, taking it down a little bit.
Many people who don't have their parents live with roommates who do have their parents. And those parents kind of sweep up the kids and say, come with us, we'll take you to dinner or whatever. So I would say at a distance, if it's something that you really want to do, it would be terrific, but don't feel an obligation at all. And your child will not be the only one at Cornell whose family is not able to come. Fall break will come on the Columbus Day weekend. That's when there will be no classes that Monday and Tuesday, so obviously Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So it's a chance for them to leave the campus if they wish. They don't have to, and many don't. They just stay here, stay in their residence hall rooms, and take a deep breath and enjoy the campus without the pressure of having to be at class and whatever. Thanksgiving, most of our students will leave. They'll either go home or they'll go home with a friend who lives closer by. Not everybody will do that. I think we may, I'm probably going to see if any of our staff are here. We may consolidate them if they're staying in the residence hall. I know, for example, at the semester break, some of our international students cannot go home. They're here for the year. We will consolidate them into a single residence hall so that we don't have one student, you know, as the only student living in a residence hall. It's scary for them and it's not safe. I honestly don't know what we do at Thanksgiving. I should know that, you think, after all these years. Our classes this year will run technically through Wednesday midday. They should check with their faculty members. Sometimes faculty members cancel the classes on Wednesday morning. Starting in the fall of 14, Thanksgiving will actually start on Wednesday. We're changing the calendar a bit next year in the spring and the fall. If they're going to be flying out of here, I would encourage you to make those reservations either from here, Binghamton, or Syracuse sooner than later. And then they'll have exams. Exams will be done before Christmas. And as pretty much as soon as they get into class, they'll be able to figure out when their final exams are if you don't already have their transportation home. Answer? Okay. Anybody else? I can't believe a room full, please, of Cornell parents were that quiet.
What is different in your presentation for transfer students?
So for transfer students, it's a good question. I don't give a parent one, but for transfer students, it will we'll talk a little bit about what's the nature of their transfer experience. Some of our transfer students have never left home either. They've gone to the local community college, so yes, they are 2 years older, but sort of this whole issue of leaving home is the same for them as it is for the first-year students. Other transfer students have been away to college already. They formed a community. Now they're having to do it again, so they bring with them some skills, but they're also trying to break into a community that feels a bit formed already. So it's one of the reasons why on West Campus we will put transfers together in a suite, but we will embed them with a group of other students. So they have some people they can feel just as lost with, but we have other Cornell students who will embrace them. We will talk with them a little bit about academic programs differently because they've got less time if they're in, let's say, College of Arts and Sciences to figure out their major. You know, they don't have 2 years, they've got one. And particularly if they're interested in studying abroad or doing a semester away, they've got a lot of organizing to do pretty quickly. So we'll spend a bit more time on some of the academic matters as transfers than we do in this first week or so with freshmen. We're obviously going to talk a lot about academics, but we know for the typical high school student coming to college for the first time, if you ever studied Maslow's hierarchy, that's what we're dealing with. We're talking about food and shelter today. We get to self-actualization a little bit later in the semester. And that's just, natural. Transfers make some of that quicker, more quickly, because they've already done it. So those are some of the differences. Please go, and then we'll... No, get right behind you. Stand right in behind her in line, and then you'll have your spot.
Just a quick question about getting the information to the parents versus getting it to the students. We didn't know anything about this... It just goes directly to them.
Let me talk about that in two different ways. I'm going to talk first about health records, and then I'm going to talk about academic records. So health records are governed by something called HIPAA. Uh-huh. It's an acronym for something I can never remember. But our physicians are obliged by law, once your child is 18, to deal with your child. They may not tell you unless your child gives them permission. That's what's written into federal law. Now, if we're at life and death, we're going to figure that out and be in touch with you. But they could have the 104 fever, tell us at Gannett, not tell you, and we may not call you if we've got that under control. So that's an area. If they're seeing a therapist and they don't want you to know that, we're not going to tell you. That's what HIPAA. So that's very narrowly constrained. Most of our students will sign a waiver that will permit the conversation, and if you want to be in conversation with their physicians, that's a discussion you ought to have, because it often is a very helpful thing that we are partnering with this, but they're the ones that are in the driver's seat. Then there are the academic records, grades. We have as a policy that we share the grades with the student. We don't mail them, they're online. And that's a conversation you and they ought to have about how are you going to find out about those grades, particularly if you're paying the bill. I sort of teased my daughter saying, they're your grades, but we're paying the bill, so you want us to pay the bill? We need to at least know how you're doing. We will be in touch with you if there's a crisis emerging, if your student, and we've had this happen, your student is not enrolled and you think he or she ought to be. If they're not enrolled, we're going to tell you they're not enrolled. But if you are in a real panic and you're talking to the academic advising office, we're going to try to have it not be a total 20 questions. But we don't, as a matter of policy, because they are the student, this is their academic experience, we don't, as a matter of policy, just send you a copy of the grades. So talk with your kid about how you're going to exchange that information. It's important. Yes, sir.
The lady there mentioned about she being 1,600 miles away. I come from a place which is 15,000 miles away.
Congratulations for being here. We're delighted to have you.
The challenges that might pose are probably a little bit different from her case, but that's not what I'm asking you about. I wanted to first of all thank you and share my impression, having been here for the last few days since the international students got their induction starting a few days back. I think it is an absolutely wonderful mechanism you have here to get started together. And I felt, along with my wife here, extremely welcome in every single session we went to. And what I actually want to ask you about is there is a problem of plenty here in terms of choices,
yes.
Options. Yep. Availability.
Yep.
Of people, in the last 4 days we were here, we walked into that many colleges, met professors, spoke. Everybody is available. And everybody says they can, do this and that if they are approached. And you briefly mentioned about time management, and which I think is probably the common challenge every single one of the students that are joining here today is going to face. Because they have 500 things available every single day.
No.
So what is your comment on that? I would just like to know, how does one get around to doing that? Because it is a problem of plenty.
Well, it's very interesting that you say that. In the essay I wrote for the book Voices, I talk just about that. You know, I say we want them to learn to ask for help. Well, we actually have a help sheet. It's 4 pages long. We tell them to get involved, and then we say, here's the 1,000 organizations. So you are right that in a university of 22,000 students with 100 different academic options, with people from all over the world, I've never heard it described as a problem of plenty, but I've certainly heard it described as how do I make the choices and how do I figure out what to do. And I think that's where our jobs collectively as guides. First of all, they don't have to do it all in the first week. And they need to, you know, sometimes they need to be reminded of that. They don't even have to do it all in the first year. You know, how do I think about it? If I try something, I may just be trying it and I discover I don't like it. Well, that's okay, because you can go on to the next. So also helping them understand that just because I go try out for the rugby club and I play a couple games and I really don't like having my nose scrunched into the ground, you know, you ought to talk to your teammates about why you're not going to appear again, but it's okay to make a choice and go someplace else. So making wise choices, and I reference that in my comment, I mean, we all struggle with, even as, you know, more than novice adults, about how do I make choices. And so share your own experiences about how do you decide, am I going to do this or that? And then listen for the, you know, to what they're expressing as real strengths and how can they dive deeper in that. Where might they want to explore something? And it's perfectly okay not to do everything. You know, I've been here 35 years. I am still learning something new about Cornell every single year because of what we are doing academically. There's a part of the campus I haven't been to before. And you know, it feels huge right now because you have traversed the campus multiple times and it's a lot of walking. And you are getting a ton of information thrown at you. It will narrow down a bit. You know, the student will begin to focus on his or her college. What do they need to do freshman year? Their community will be primarily, you know, we start with your roommate, your floor, your residence hall. So we try to help them break this big place into smaller communities. And we often talk at Cornell about trying to build a community of communities. And so we ask our students to figure out how to find, you know, a smaller community. We hope they don't find just one and get stuck there. But we also know that that's how they're going to begin to feel anchored. That's an I'll remember that phrase. Yes, we'll take a couple more questions, please.
It's, as you said and he said, it's a little overwhelming, a lot to choose, a lot to do. So you gave us the police number, the health number. What about on the psychological level? If they get into a panic attack or they cannot cope with this and we kind of find out over the phone, what is the best thing we can do?
So the answer to that would be a couple. I mean, within our Gannett Health Services, we have a complete mental health staff. And there is, when you call that number, if the issue is mental health, they'll get in touch with a counselor that night and put them together. And then we can refer them, you know, to the staff. Their residence hall director has some training. They can be very helpful. They're not therapists, but they can help them make decisions and cope. We also have counselors spread around the campus, something called Let's Talk. So some of our students are shy about walking into Gannett to go to psychological services, but they're very comfortable going to Let's Talk. It's the exact same staff, and they're just spread around campus. But if you got a call in the middle of the night and your child was in the midst of what you were pretty sure was a honest-to-goodness panic attack, I'd call Gannett, is what I would do. And then I might call the residence hall director as well and have them walk down the hall and, or go find the RA. If they're just upset, you know, I would listen and talk and guide and call me in the morning. A couple more questions. Yes, sir.
For the Gannett Health System, we have an HMO plan that we have our daughter enrolled in. Do people transfer the Gannett Health System as a new primary care physician?
Some do. You know, some will keep their primary care.
It's just a question of pre-authorization for you know, primary care physician versus specialist.
I think it will, you know, to some extent, it will depend upon how we're considered in-network or not.
Right.
And that's a conversation I would...
Have with them,
because I'm going to get beyond my level of expertise pretty
okay.
quickly.
Okay. Do you know the phone number to Gannett offhand?
255-5155.
I'm sorry. Look, I got to write this down.
205-605-255-5155.
Thank you.
Sir.
Hi. Well, I'd like to thank you for this presentation. This very morning during lunch, I was talking to my daughter about work options. And it caught my attention that you mentioned that not only it's an educational, but a satisfaction factor. Will you share some strategies to get involved with the jobs available here at Cornell?
There are many different ways you can find employment on the campus. If you go into the dining halls right now, you'll find staff right there saying, "Want a job?" They're advertising about what they have available. All of our job listings are posted online, so they can go to student employment, and they'll see all the jobs that are posted, and then they can say, "Oh, I'd like to go talk to the fitness center people because I'd like to work there." And they'll talk about how you go about, you know, making that, filing an application for that position. So I would first go to the student employment website. If there are questions, you can go to the student employment office in Day Hall. Some students will want to have a job where they don't have to really think much in terms of academic work. So a dining position, working in the fitness centers, checking books at the library might be what they're wanting to do. Other students might be more interested to work in an office or perhaps find a way to work in an academic setting. So some of that is just worth talking with your son or daughter about, your daughter, about what kind of job is she thinking she might be interested in. Places like my office, you know, typically hire a student a year because we want them to answer the phones, fill in when people aren't there, do some office work. So you know, there are all kinds of jobs. There are students who are working in labs, washing beakers. So what they might be interested in, the kind of work that they want, you know, is it professionally related or is it just going to give me some employment? But it's a lot of great resources are online. Sir.
There's a lot of information that should be directed to parents. We're paying, so we need to know when bills are due. I found how to take care of that one, and we've done it. But other things like the schedule for these 2 days, the schedule for the parents' weekend, and other things I may not have heard about yet that so far have gone through my daughter rather than to us so we get it more directly. Is there anything we can do about that?
So we need to make sure we have your email address, that you shared that on the parent form that you filled out back in May, because we will do a monthly newsletter to parents where we provide all kinds of links. So if you did not give us the email, your email address, please make sure that we have it. The family guide should have been sent home. It may have been in an envelope with your daughter's name on it. But probably the most direct mailings that we will do will be in the email we will push out to parents once a month with things you need to know about this month. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. First of all, thank you for the presentation. And my question is related to transportation from Cornell to the main airports. Would they use Cornell transportation or public transportation to get a list?
To the Ithaca airport?
Well, I was thinking about Syracuse.
Okay. So Cornell will not provide transportation to the Syracuse airport. There is a limousine service. It's not really a limousine, so don't get excited about it, but they call themselves a limousine service. It's a van service that does go to the Syracuse airport. So you can make arrangements to do that, that you can make a reservation, and that they'll take you up to the Syracuse airport. I don't know the name of it off the top of my head, but there is that available. Another piece of transportation I would just make sure you all know, if you have any connection to New York City, we run a campus-to-campus bus. You may have seen it. It runs 3 times a day. Anybody can take it. It's a wonderful bus because it's not as crowded as the short line bus, and it goes from 3 stops on the Cornell campus North Campus, Central Campus, and the B lot, and it stops at the Cornell Club at Midtown and the Weill Cornell Medical College. So it's got Wi-Fi service, it's got food in the back of the bus, and you can register for that online. All you have to do is type in campus to campus bus, and you can make a reservation for that. So that gets you to back and forth to New York City. There's also public bus service from the bus station downtown, but I highly recommend the campus to campus bus. It takes about 4 hours door to door. So don't ask how fast they're going on Route 81. Let's take these last two questions. Sir, you were up first, and then we'll go over here.
Thank you for the very informative presentation. I have a question related to mental health. So if a student has a mental health issue, and maybe that student choose not to tell the parents, but maybe choose to tell your healthcare professional, at which point the problem becomes sufficiently severe, and you say, okay, now the parents need to get involved?
So that will be the decision of the therapist. And not being a therapist, I don't know that I can exactly say when they'll make that decision. But it will often, if the therapist is pretty convinced that you need to play a role in that, they'll spend time talking with the Cornell student about, okay, how do we involve your parents? And what they'll typically recommend is that they have the conversation with you. Every once in a while, we will not involve parents really at all, because that's the source of the problem. You know, I'm just being medically accurate. It's not typical, but sometimes that is the source of the problem. If we think that the student needs to take some time off, because they, you know, it's like someone who's got cancer and they have to take a semester off because they've got to get chemotherapy. Sometimes people with mental health issues need to take a semester off because they've got to focus on that. Often that's when we'll say, okay, now it's time, we need to figure out how we're going to bring your parents into this conversation. But it will always, and this is the code of professional ethics of the therapist, they have to take the guidance, you know, from the client, unless it's really life and death, and then we'll, as I said, we'll be in touch. But HIPAA rules are very, very stringent. I guess we got a couple more questions. Okay.
First, so excited to be here and so proud of my kid for getting accepted. And what a beautiful campus and a great presentation.
Thank you.
So with that excitement and passion, I'd like to know how to get involved in the Parents Fund.
How to get involved with the Parents Fund. Elizabeth Webster, who is standing in the back, is the person you want to talk with as you leave here. And she will give you the answer to that question. Wonderful. Sir, over here, and then we'll come back over here.
Yeah, my question relates to alcohol and substance abuse.
Yep.
What kind of efforts or programs do you have in place on campus to try to minimize binge drinking, substance abuse, not only on campus, but within the fraternity system?
Well, this could be a presentation in and of itself, but I'll try to hit the highlights. We asked all of your students to do an alcohol education program as part of their coming to campus as one of our initial expectations. We will talk about it. They're talking about it right now, and I guarantee you, in the RA session. Our rules for fraternity and sorority new member recruitment would be such that freshmen really should not be in the fraternities and sororities this fall semester. As you know, it's illegal to drink until you're 21, so they've got to figure out how they're going to deal with the rules. We will have lots of conversations in student groups about both the law, how to deal with peers that are making one set of choices, as I was mentioning earlier, and you need to make another set of choices. If we find a student in possession underage, they will be cited as violating our campus code of conduct. If it's not an egregious violation, their first penalty will be an educational sanction. We have a program called Basics. It's a motivational interviewing that we will do with them. And similar to what I was describing earlier, sort of putting up a picture, a mirror to themselves about their drinking. If someone needs medical help because they've had too much to drink, we have a medical amnesty protocol where the person who calls for the help and the person who's had too much to drink, if that's the only problem, they will not get into trouble because we want them to get help. Sometimes what happens is they had too much to drink, and oh, by the way, there was property damage, there'd been a fight, there was some hazing. We might not put him in trouble for the alcohol, but we may have to deal with those other issues. If there's a second violation, we will be in touch with the student, and the dean of students will call the student, if medical amnesty had not been involved, and the dean of students will be sending you a letter home. Hopefully your son or daughter will have called you first. And if it's a third violation, you'll hear from our judicial administrator, particularly if it's in a short period of time, and we may often start a conversation about it's time to take some time off. Because our theory is if we've caught a student three times with alcohol, they're not just doing it those three times. It's sort of like speeding. If I get caught speeding three times in a short period of time, I'm probably speeding a lot more than three times. I just got caught three times. So that to us is an indication that we have an alcohol dependency issue. Alcoholism is a disease, and they need help managing that disease. So we'll encourage them to take some time away, get healthy, and then come back. We have some very highly trained staff in Gannett around alcohol. We also have all kinds of initiatives that we're doing in partnership with other institutions, social norming campaign, building up alternative activities that are not alcohol-based that students can participate in. So there, as I said, we could have a whole evening about a variety of strategies. What we're trying to deal with it is from a public health perspective, what's the environment we're creating, what's the enforcement we put in place, what's the education that they need. The issue that I would say is they know all the laws, they know all the reasons why they shouldn't drink. The peer effect is just a huge issue. They had to deal with in high school, and they're having to deal with here. And our students are stepping up, and we have a wonderful group of students who've just gotten themselves organized called Cayuga's Watchers. And they're a group of students who are trained, who are going to go to social events. If they're invited by the host, they will be sober while they're there. They're not to catch people, but they're basically to be a set of eyes and ears, so to try to help the students not get themselves into trouble. And these are some of our best student leaders who are choosing to do this. And so I'm hoping that not only will they be a great support network, safety net, but they're going to begin to change the culture a bit. But this is one of higher education's biggest challenges. So thanks for the question. One, two, and then you guys have been enormously patient. So, yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much once again for your wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
I want to know about Cornell's policy on guns.
On guns. Happy to talk about that. Guns are not permitted on campus. It is illegal to have a student to have a gun or a weapon in their room. If we have a student who happens to be a hunter, my brother was a hunter and went to Colgate, loved to hunt, those firearms must be registered with the police. They must be stored at the police. But guns are not permitted on campus. Plain and simple. And if they're found with a gun, that's a violation. Found with a weapon, that's a violation of our campus code. And depending upon the situation in which they were found with a gun, it can be reason for very serious sanction. Yes, ma'am.
I don't know about anybody else, but in my house, things come and we don't always see them. So if we did not get a student guide or a family guide, what's the best place to get those on campus?
Most of it's online. So the best thing to do is to go online first. What you might do, I don't know if we have extras of the student handbook, but check at the TATCON Center. If we did, that's where it would be, but online is where. The Carroll TATCON Center is a wonderful resource in Balch Hall, that beautiful Gothic residence hall right as you come across. If you go up if you're coming across North Campus and there's that road that went to the right, go up that road. The Carroll TATCON Center is in South Balch. It's a student first-year resource center run by staff and students. It has a cafe in there, and that's where our new student programs is anchored. So, and it's a great resource for your sons and daughters as well. You guys get the award for the most patience in the world. Thank you so much. Glad to see you.